Facebook, Google, all of these companies are trying to figure out where are the rules and where are they going to draw the line.
There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full.
If you own a bond in your retirement portfolio, the price of that is going to go down.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
720 WGN and a happy Thursday afternoon, everyone. 1210 from the Allstate Skyline Studios. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand for today until 1 o'clock. And we've got a packed show here today, so we're going to jump right into things with our first guest. Joan Salzman is the senior reporter at CNET, and CNET always joins us on Thursdays. And Joan, thanks for joining us here today.
Great to be here.
All right, so we got to jump right into this Apple Card because a lot of folks that I work with were really excited because they got this invite. A few others just keep on hitting refresh on their email and they haven't gotten anything yet. What is the Apple Card and what is all the hype about?
The Apple Card is a credit card that's in partnership with Goldman Sachs. It's a titanium physical card, but you know, this being Apple, there's obviously a digital sort of e-wallet element to it. Apple just began sending out its email invites to people who signed up to be notified when the card is available. They just started out this week, but there is a larger public launch due later this month, so some of your colleagues that are still compulsively refreshing, hopefully they'll get a chance very soon.
You know, I get it when Apple products come out and there's lines that form and there's excitement that builds because there's something really tangible about holding a new phone with new features, but what is the advantageous aspect of an Apple card that makes this so appealing for people?
Well, one of the bottom line appealing features to it is, you know, this is something you imagine that Apple faithful would be interested in to begin with, and it includes a heightened cash back on Apple products. So you get 3% back on purchases made directly with Apple. That goes not just for devices, which are obviously usually very high dollar value items, that cash back can be meaningful, but it also goes for things like your subscriptions that you get through your iPhone. So if you subscribe to Netflix through your iPhone or Spotify or whatever, that's something that could also, you could get some money back on those. And beyond that, you know, it's, you know how Apple likes to work. Everything's plugged into their ecosystem. They like to make things simple and easy and make the data, the information that you get involved with these transactions really simple to be able to understand what you're being charged for.
One thing I really like, you know, because I have like a savings account that I got because it has really high interest, but you don't see it for a couple months. What is so cool about the Apple thing, I don't know if other places do this on cashback, the idea that it's instantaneous. They do it like every day.
Yeah, the cashback is put back into your account every day through a feature the company calls Daily Cash. And so I don't, you know, people, there are definitely people that are super into cashback. There are those people that have different credit cards for different rewards. I don't know how much daily cashback is going to matter to the run-of-the-mill credit card user, but, you know, this is a titanium fancy card. It's definitely trying to appeal to people that take their credit cards somewhat seriously.
That's great. Okay, let's talk about cord cutting. You know, obviously it continues to grow and grow, and Sling TV, you got a review up on your website. I've heard about it for a couple years now, and it might be the oldest such, but it might be the best option for a lot of people out there.
You know, there are a lot of options now more than ever to get television live channels on your devices over the internet rather than having to pay for that beloved, very expensive cable or satellite bill. What we found at CNET is that Sling is still the best value for what you get. And something that people need to keep in mind is that we've also seen all of these live channel services tooling around with their prices, especially raising them lately. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of these launches happen, and they used introductory, not necessarily introductory, but their initial pricing was set lower. They lost money on those channels because they're really expensive, and we're starting to see them start to tap the prices up. Sling, however, our reviewers have found is generally the best value for people.
For those that are listening that maybe have always used cable TV, a lot of our listeners probably might even still use the bunny ears or whatever that might be and get it over the airwaves. What is Sling TV? How does it work for people? Do you get access to anything that you would on your normal TV? Is it only through certain cable subscriptions? How does it work?
Well, there's a big difference. One of the main differences between something like Sling and your normal cable package is cable is a fire hose. You pay a big price, but you also get everything that you want in one place, and you don't have to hop around or do any mental math to figure out where to get the show you want to watch. with Sling and other competitors, there's different tiers. There's different tiers that have different channels. There's different prices for different tiers. There's different plans. It's much more complicated. So if you're a consumer where you are really valuing the simplicity of just getting it all in one place, then cable might actually still be for you. But the advantage to all of these live streaming channels over the internet is that they all get rid of some of the trappings of cable, like having an installation or these contracts that lock you in for 2 years. You can get in, you can get out. If you don't like it, you can decide to switch to something else. And if you are only interested in watching, say, the Olympics for a month and a half every 2 years, you can just get it for that period of time. There's a lot more flexibility, even if there is more complication.
That makes sense. All right, for cord cutters as well, everyone's been eagerly anticipating Disney Plus, the idea of the streaming service coming from Disney. And it's interesting, they are offering this bundle discount, which all of a sudden, you seem like you're getting a whole bunch for the same price that you get Netflix for.
Right. So we knew that Disney was hoping to bundle their forthcoming Disney Plus service with the existing streaming services they have, which is Hulu, supported by ads, and ESPN Plus. We found out this week that they're going to price it at $12.99. That's coincidentally, they say, exactly the same price as the most popular Netflix plan.
So do you believe them on the coincidence?
I mean, I'm not going to be the one that calls Bob Iger a liar, but you can imagine that they're looking at the competitive field very closely. I'm sure there's other things at play, but $12.99 is the price that you get one Netflix subscription for their kind of most popular plan. Then, you know, you can do some of the math. You can look at the other side and say, I get one subscription from Netflix, I get three altogether from Disney. It really just kind of, I think, comes down to the content that both of those offers provide, if they have what you particularly are interested in watching.
Do we know yet exactly what's going to be on Disney Plus? Like, is it going to be just the shows? Is it going to be every single movie? Or are they going to kind of do what they do with Netflix and pick and choose here and there, take some on, take some off?
So the short answer is, eventually, yes. Disney Plus is going to have basically everything Disney, and that's not just stuff that's Disney Studio, that goes for Marvel, that goes for Star Wars, that goes for Pixar, that goes for Nat Geo, that goes for ABC content. Eventually, Disney Plus is going to be where all the quote-unquote family-friendly stuff that comes from all over the world of Disney is going to be. In the short term, though, the long answer is it's not all going to happen right away. At the beginning, there's going to be a lot of stuff, but for example, you won't have every single Marvel movie on Disney Plus at the very first day at launch on November 12th. It's going to take time for them to unlock all that really, really juicy content that they've licensed out to other people. To get that all back in-house just takes time for those previous deals to expire.
Yeah, we had a commenter mentioning on that this could be a hit to Netflix. We'll just have to wait and see how that works out. And really quickly, last story, Instagram got rid of some accounts, got rid of some meme accounts, which I guess would be accounts that primarily just, they don't post personal things or business things. They post funny memes or memes to get reactions from people. But now they're hiring a position that's trying to work with them, right?
Right. So the social media company is hiring someone to work with digital media publishers. The idea here is that they would be bringing in somebody who would find and plan initiatives with these media publishers, including meme accounts. That way, I imagine the idea is that there's more of a direct line of communication. It's not quite so much as a wild, wild west.
Yeah, that makes certain sense. Okay, Joan, thanks so much for joining us here. 720 WGN, the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Thursday afternoon. John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand until 1 o'clock. Well, the July jobs number, at least seemingly pretty good, 164,000 jobs added in July, the unemployment rate at 3.7%. Everything seems good, but we do have some bankruptcy claims causing some problems. Over 40,000 jobs through this year, through July, have been lost due to bankruptcy through companies. And here to break that down for us is Andy Challenger, the Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas. Andy, thanks for joining us here.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.
All right, so what does this mean? Because if we feel like we're healthy with our jobs report, even if some people do say it is a little overhyped, what's happening here with bankruptcies causing all these lost jobs?
Yeah, despite the really solid jobs reports that we've been seeing the last couple months, there is some, there are a few negative aspects that, we're finding deeper in the jobs cuts reports. We saw bankruptcy-related job cuts were 40% higher over the first 7 months this year as compared to last year. And it's actually the largest number of job cuts we've seen related to bankruptcies over a seven-month period since 2009, since the Great Recession. So there are certainly companies out there that are still facing a difficult time. And companies that will continue to make changes.
Is there any historical precedence to seeing a rise in bankruptcy job losses that could foretell bad news on the economic front in general, or is it hard to make that claim?
It is hard to make that claim a little bit. We looked back a little bit before the recession, didn't see the same type of rise. Labor tends to be a lagging indicator when it comes to the overall economy. So hard in some ways to predict what's going to happen in the future overall.
Is
when
it,
you just look at the jobs numbers, but yeah. It does show, you know, what's happening within certain industries.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, within those industries, is this a matter of, you know, you mentioned Barney's closing down or filing for bankruptcy protection. Is it a matter of that this is new technologies taking over businesses that have been maybe staple organizations that just can't survive in this newer, innovative industries? Or is it kind of spread out over all industries, including manufacturing and stuff like that?
It's coming from a couple industries, but primarily, like you mentioned, these cuts are related to bankruptcy are coming from the retail sector. We've seen a 3 or 4 year trend with a lot of job cuts emanating out of that sector. But recently we've seen more and more of those cuts, not just because of cost-cutting measures, but because retailers that haven't been able to make the switch from brick-and-mortar retail quickly enough to e-commerce are actually filing for bankruptcy protection.
So the raw numbers of cuts due to bankruptcies are going up. What about as a percentage of total jobs cut?
Yeah, it's a big jump this year. So the first 7 months, about 11.6% of all the cuts we've seen have come from bankruptcy. We actually saw a quick start to bankruptcy cuts last year, but traditionally, I'd say over the last 10 years, that number's never come above 3 or 4%.
Hmm.
So it's a significant increase, and I think it shows that despite the fact that we're in the strongest economy in a lot of ways that we've seen, or in the longest expansion right. In American history, consumer spending is actually on the rise. There are still a lot of retailers that haven't been able to keep up with the change of technology in the retail sector and are, you know, now facing kind of the ultimate closure.
Andy Challenger, the Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas, thanks for breaking it down for us.
Thanks for having me.
720 WGN, John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch until 1 o'clock. And I got to mention, during the commercial break, my next guest and I were chatting, and man, they could have just recorded that whole interview we did, Krishna, because we covered a lot about what you guys do over at Webinize. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, John.
Tell us what Webinize is.
Yeah, Webinize Media, what we do is we'll go in and we'll help you develop your strategy. You've got a business, you want to grow that business revenue-wise, and what we'll do is we'll go in, we'll help you develop your branding, your website, your marketing campaigns,
A to Z,
but we're going to do it based on what your goals are today and what your goals are in the future.
Do you find a lot of new business owners or just people starting up or people that have done it for a long time say, you know what, I know how to use my phone, I'm good at this digital strategy, I can do it by myself?
Absolutely. We find that a lot of entrepreneurs feel that they're wearing too many hats. They can mm-hmm. go in, they can do everything, but the reality is they have to know every step of the process and how to optimize each piece. When you're building a campaign, you're trying to build awareness, evaluation, and conversion. And each one of those has subtopics in and of itself. And you want to make sure that you give people the right information, the right brand, the right message, etc., at the right point. It's like a marriage. I mean, you're not going to go up to a girl right away or somebody else and just say, hey, do you want to marry me? You got to go. I mean, you've got to go.
You got to work at that a little bit.
You got to build that relationship. You know, you've got to say, hey, build that awareness to say, hey, this is my product, this is what we do, how do you want to utilize it, or what are your needs, as opposed to me,
yeah.
And what do I do? It's what do you need from me that I can help you with?
I think it's probably like a lot of people that watch the Bears or the Sox and say, well, I played catch, I know how to do that, and criticize you when it's the professionals that really know what the heck they're doing. And I imagine that, you know, look, as businesses look at their budgets and say, you know, things are tight, I need to find items to cut, that's where they think that they can cut, but they certainly shouldn't. One thing about, like, designing a website, I was telling you about this, I tried to use one of those, a box websites that says, oh, yeah, we'll design it for you, it'll be really simple, you just plug in these things. I didn't really know what I was doing. I tried to do it once and I just couldn't even, first of all, figure out the technology side of things. But also, I think people don't really, they design a website based on what they think is their best idea, but not necessarily what users are looking for.
That's exactly one of the biggest issues. The goal of your website is to lead people through the buying process. First of all, build that awareness so that people know, like, and trust you. So that they understand, well, what are you all about, mm-hmm. and do your values, do you align in terms of what you want to do in whether it's a product or a service, and be able to understand what are the details, and then be able to say, okay, I understand this, but you're going to lead them stepwise through your different pages, your content, your design, etc., so they can better understand all the aspects of what you do and how you go about doing that.
Looking at a bunch of different websites nowadays, I think like a couple years ago, I liked a little flash on my website, not talking about the operating system or whatever it's called, but, you know, some really interesting things moving around back and forth. That was interesting to me on a desktop. But when I am on my mobile phone, I just want the darn information. I don't need all the fancy things. Is that a trend? Do you think now people are trying to get a little bit more simpler on their websites?
Oh, absolutely. Flash was, let's call it yesterday.
Okay.
Now, it's about simplicity, it's about images, but it's also about video that's engaging.
Mm-hmm.
I think video is the biggest changeover that we see. We find video content to be the most engaging and one of the higher converting
really?
Pieces.
Because I find, sometimes with video, as soon as I see a video pop up, unless it's really going to get me quick, I sometimes move on. And I guess that's what you guys do. You guys recognize that, hey, if you're going to have a video, don't start with the boring stuff, start with the flashy stuff.
Exactly. And you use it, and it also depends on the purpose. So what we're coming up with is a video series where we help you build your authority. So think about when you are looking at content. If you're looking at two people that have the same knowledge level,
mm-hmm.
but one person has a video series that they've come out with, they've come out with 20 videos that describe topics, you're going to feel a little more compelled, a little bit, they're going to have a lot more authority, credibility, etc. So it's about coming up with that content that invests users in the brand and the knowledge sphere.
Mm-hmm. So I got to ask also, too, because, you know, these days I just Google everything. I don't even go to the original. I don't enter .com to anything. I just Google it and hope that the result that I want is the one that's on the top. For a lot of people, it is, but that is done through careful research and execution, right? You don't just get to have a name and that is going to be the top Google search result. You need to work at that and know what to do to get that.
Absolutely. You know, over the last year, Google made over 3,200 changes. So if we look over the last few years, the changes that Google has made have made, if you look at your organic search results,
mm-hmm.
they're coming farther down
in
the search page. So normally,
ad.
Exactly. And the ads have gotten bigger.
Yes.
Because they have, you know, their local ratings, or they'll have a little more phrasing and a few more links. So what that's done is that's pushed the actual organic content farther down in the page below the fold. And it's made it harder for people to get those results.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people also, when it comes to social media and their strategies, they say, well, I do Facebook, I do Instagram, I can do it for my company. Well, first of all, I imagine you guys would say it's a whole different language when you're talking about business. You're trying to get a whole different thing than getting grandma just to like the picture of your kid. But I think that's what a lot of people think. They're like, I know this, I can do this. And I imagine you guys have a different strategy in mind.
That's a very big piece of the puzzle, because
mm-hmm.
it's a misconception to think, well, I can just create a video and have it go, or a piece of content. You again have to look at the goals and the intent of the buyer that you're, or the person that you're trying to hit, because you can create a post, But if all they do is like it and they don't do anything else, how is that helping you?
Yeah.
You want to lead them again through the journey and provide the content that they're looking for to help them make that decision, interact with them so they go to the next step. So, for example, if they're looking at a camera, you're not going to give them, if you've just introduced a brand new camera, you're not going to give them, you know, do you want to buy right now, kind of a buy page. You're going to give them, you know, an initial piece of content that defines the features, benefits, all the different parts of the camera and how it relates to them.
So that when they get to that buy page, they're already sold on the ad. They don't have that sticker shock of the number may not. They might be, all right, I'm already invested into this thing.
Exactly, yeah. Because they're evaluating all of this stuff. They're doing a lot of research and evaluating online, and you want to make sure you're providing pertinent content at that evaluation phase that says, you know, here's a comparison. Here's what we do. Here's what this camera does. It's lighter, faster, stronger, whatever.
Right. And you're very welcome to, you've go ahead and just tell us that you're going to help out our listeners a little bit here too, right?
Yeah, we've got an offer for WGN listeners. If you go to webinizemedia.com/WGN, what we'll do is we'll give you a free website evaluation and a 30-minute consultation.
I got to say, that's just from the genuine place in your heart, right?
Certainly.
Absolutely. Webinize.com/WGN. Christian, thanks so much for stopping on by.
Thank you very much.
Time now for the Wintrust Business Minute here on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Oh boy, this is a trend that you do not want to be a part of. Yesterday I mentioned that Walgreens is closing 200 stores, and now more are coming from Sears. Although these ones aren't surprising. The Sears in Bloomingdale and Merrillville, Indiana will close their doors in October. The slow demise of Sears has been tough to watch, but the company was officially put up for auction back in February. And since this retailer was such a giant, boasting over 425 stores across the country, it's fair that this is taking some time to unravel. They were once the largest retailer in the U.S. And another big strategy in the business world has been subscription business models. Groupon is one of the latest to add the models to customers called Groupon Select. It's a $5 per month program that provides shoppers with extra discounts and free shipping. They already boast 150,000 members and they look to grow it. They've had some trouble recently, so they'll surely start to get savvy with their business strategy. You gotta think out of the box to get ahead.
Wait, doesn't everyone have a subscription model? Guys, how is this different?
I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
720 WGN, John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch for a few more moments. Happy to chat with my good friend Amy Guth, the host of the Crane's Daily Gist. How you doing, Amy?
I'm good. That's a little bit cheerier music than I feel like is normally around for Bertrand.
That's my order and my edict every time. I'm like, I don't care what you put on, Bennett, but make it happy because we don't need any of those Bertrand sour moods following me around. No, I'm just kidding. Love you, Steve.
The chill sounds of Bertrand. Yes. We love Bertrand. He's great.
He'll be back tomorrow, too, for sure. Okay, so Amy, reading in Crane Chicago Business, this fascinating story. You know, I think a lot of us have heard of the LEED certifications that buildings can get if they're environmentally healthy.
That's right.
But what about certifications for buildings that might make you live a happier or healthier life?
Right. So we've talked about the LEED certification, and that's about the healthy building, as you said. This is the WELL certification. Okay. This is really interesting. And there is a South Loop apartment tower that has gotten this. And so I talk about this today on Crane's Daily Gist. It's really interesting. And so the WELL certification focuses on seven categories. It's air, water, nourishment, light, fitness, comfort, and mind. Can you imagine that your landlord cares about any of those?
Like, does that mean the doorman's feeding you grapes as you lay in bed or something? Or how does that work? What's
now,
the
that's
nourishment?
A good plan. Well, the way the nourishment part has been addressed is there's going to be some like chef-led nutritional conversations. There's this huge, I need to go see this because this sounds really cool. It's a four-story winter garden to bring nature indoors, which I'm totally on board with.
Hopefully it's ready for 6 months of winter. Yeah,
that's right. There's roller shades with some, you know, blackout shades to regulate your circadian rhythm,
that's
things
cool.
like that. So it's really like the idea is looking out for the health and well-being of the residents. But the bigger picture here is about there's so many apartment buildings now. There's so many of them. There's like 94% occupancy in this one little area right now that landlords and building owners are really having this kind of one-upmanship battle of amenities. And some of them are real fancy, like they are doing some extremely fancy things, like dog grooming services and golf simulators and demo kitchens.
Golf simulators, like as part of your rent, like or at least this is what you get when you come here.
Yeah, I mean, at one point I lived in a building that had like a big room you could sort of rent, and it had a fridge in it.
Oh,
so if you wanted to throw a
party,
I was like, wow, That's pretty fancy. Yeah. Now, I mean, you can get a manicure and a pedicure. Like, there's so much stuff in these buildings. And it's really all about competition for residents because mm-hmm. there's a lot of buildings to choose from. There's a ton going up there. I mean, we have that NEMA building that's going up that's huge and mm-hmm. record-breaking and threatening to all the other skyscrapers right. because it's giant. So it's really just kind of about, like, it's about competitive edge among building owners.
Yeah, I find it fascinating because the LEED thing's been around for a while.
Yeah.
But you think of more commercial businesses that put up their LEED
That's
buildings.
Right.
Residentials haven't had so many luck, or they haven't had luck with getting residential buildings to do it, because I imagine that's not something, I mean, some people, of course, care, a lot of people care about
sure.
environmental, but maybe that's not the reason they're signing the lease. So is this just one extra certification that might just push that one potential renter or buyer over the edge?
Theoretically, yeah. But, you know, some analysts that spoke to Cranes kind of said, well, it's kind of not clear whether that really moves the needle. I don't think it makes that big a difference. So we'll see if this WELL designation does. But also earning that label, getting that certification for WELL is not cheap for a building that size, which is about 500,000 square feet. The registration fee is about 10 grand. So it's not, I mean, you got to really want that to mm-hmm. go get it. Otherwise, you know, at some point you got to pass that cost off to the tenants.
It's like how you get nominated for an Emmy. You got to buy your way into the nomination
process. Is that how?
Oh. You got to pay a little money for that. Just to get, you know, considered. I also love the name of the building, by the way, Essex on the Park. It's a very New York sounding name.
Oh, it sounds so fancy. I mean, I aspire to one day live in a building with a name
that says on the park at the end of it. Yeah, sure. Any name. It's
or
fine.
It either starts with a the or ends with an on the park. Because then I'm like, okay, Guth, you're doing okay.
Yeah, you're doing fine. Guth, where can people find out more about this in the podcast?
The best way to do it is to subscribe to the afternoon updates from Crane's Chicago Business, or you can find it at WGN Radio Plus.
Amy, good to talk with you as always.
Always a pleasure.